Good morning. Welcome to the Senate Education Committee. Today is March 24th, Friday, and it's also my daughter's birthday. I'll just throw that out there.
Congratulations.
Today we have present Senator Stevens, Senator Coghill, Senator Begich, and myself, Chair Hughes. And let's remember our cell phone etiquette, and thank you for those assisting us today. Today we will be hearing a second hearing on Senate Bill 87, School Construction Energy Efficiency Standards. And we heard this bill on Wednesday, and we ran out of time to ask many questions. So we also, and at that time we had a lot of people online to assist us with those questions. So they agreed to come back today, so we're going to hear that first. And then we will hear, secondly, Senate Bill 78 by Senator Bishop, the Permanent Fund Dividend Contributions Lottery. And this bill will set up a system so that Alaskan adults will be able to purchase lottery or raffle tickets with your PFD, in which a large portion of the proceeds would go towards public education. And we're ending early today. Our goal is to end about 8:45 due to a bill up in Senate Finance. So let's go get rolling. So, Brittany, if you'd like to come forward, and then I'll let everyone know who is online for questions. So we have Department of Administration. We have Jason. Let's make sure he's actually on. Yes, he is. Jason Souza. He's the Chief Procurement Officer. And with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, we have Stacy Schubert online, as well as John Anderson, I believe. And the Alaska Energy Authority, Katie Conway. And then Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Chris Hodgen, with the Energy Efficiency Program. And Joel St. Aubin, the Director of Statewide Public Facilities. And then with Department of Early Education and Early Development, Tim Merig and Heidi Teschner. So we have quite a team available to us today for any questions you might have. And so I will open it up at this point. Brittany, you have any opening remarks you might want to say before we get rolling with questions?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brittany Hutchison, staff to Senator McKinnon. I will briefly summarize the purpose and goal of Senate Bill 87. Senate Bill 87 will increase energy and operating efficiency in our school buildings. It will help make our schools more affordable, maintainable, and longer lasting. The school districts and the state need long-term operating cost savings in our public schools. The energy and operating costs are eating up the base student allocation. As stewards of public funds, efficient use of money and energy is essential to public policy. We need to maintain and control costs for all public school facilities and extend the lives of our public school facilities. We can do that by being more energy efficient, by using standardized component parts, and by placing prioritization on classroom infrastructure and functional design. And Madam Chair, that's exactly what this bill does.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Brittany and general questions about the bill? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry for having missed our last meeting when this was presented, but just a couple questions on the on the group. Who is the group you're putting together to make these recommendations? And then secondly, a little concerned about co-locating a school with another state facility. I mean, I think you'll find that schools are very concerned about who enters their facilities and who's around. Could you just sort of address those two issues, the group and then the co-locating?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Stevens. I am just looking for the section where it is. It is in section. Thank you. It's in section 10, page 9. So it's a working group of 9 members, one member from the Department of Education, one member from Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, one member from the Alaska Energy Authority, one member from the Cold Climate Housing Research Center, one member from the Department of Transportation, one superintendent from a rural public school, one superintendent from an urban public school, and 2 members from the construction industry, one with expertise in urban areas and one with expertise in rural areas. And then in response to your question about co-location of facilities, we do have in here that any agency or organization that is co-located in a school, they all must have background requirements done that every teacher is required to have done, and we also will have a required separate entrance and exit. And we're looking at things such as health aides, maybe firefighters, and libraries, year-round open libraries. We're looking at things such like that. But I'm ready to answer any other concerns you might have.
Well, thank you. Just concern that I have had, don't have now, but villages in Bristol Bay, even up close to Dilling, quite far north, and I know such a real concern there for energy costs. And but it sounds like you're going to have people on this who will understand the costs of running a school in near Bethel.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that is correct.
Okay, thanks.
I have a question for you, Brittany, since we've looked at the list of who is on the working group. There are only, I believe, let me get back to that page, I think two members from the construction industry. Do you feel that that's adequate? Because it's really all, it seems like that knowledge would be really important. Is two enough? Sometimes when we have these meetings, someone may not be able to show up. You've got a lot of other folks on here. Would you consider adding another, or maybe having one be either from the Energy Authority or the Cold Climate Housing?
Yes, through the chair. We have considered that. We have heard concerns about that. The fact that there are no architects or designers on this board, we've heard that concern. And the senator is open to any recommendations that the committee might have on how to broadly expand this committee. However, we do not want to make it so broad so that it's hard to get a quorum. We would like to keep it between 9 and 11 members, but the construction of those members is up to the committee.
Okay, thank you, Senator Beckett.
Madam Chair, maybe it as a suggestion, it might be helpful to have two alternates to the construction industry seats, and then that way you'd always have a backup for the construction industry to be covered. This might be a suggestion to actually name two alternates so that they feel the responsibility.
Thank you for that suggestion, Senator Beckett. Right now it has 9, is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Okay. And the sponsor, you said, would be open up to 11. Is that 9 to 11?
Through the chair, that is correct. I'm hesitant to put a definitive number on it, but that was a recommended number just to keep it more manageable and obviously be an odd number.
Right, thank you. I have heard that it's 9 to 11 is ideal for boards. So are there any other questions? Brittany, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just concerned about I know how schools are built, and the local district is involved. They pay for much of it. The school board is involved in approving it. Does this group have power over what the local community decides? Can they tell them what they can and can't do? Does this have a higher authority than the owner of the building will have?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I do not believe so. This bill does not try to overcome local control at all. If we do come up with standardized options components, they would obviously be options. So the school districts can choose between the designs that are purchased, they can choose between the components that are used. And we do have a section in here that limits the amount per square foot that can be spent on major maintenance or construction. However, if a school district decides that they want to go above and beyond that, they can. However, they must pay for it out of their own funds. So we are not trying to block local control at all, and they are welcome to do what they would like still, but we would like them to follow a certain standard, a certain plan, so that it's a little more energy efficient, a little more productive construction-wise.
So more of an advisory capacity to the district.
Through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Brittany, I had a question whether an existing school that wanted to convert to a multi-use facility, would it go through the same process?
Through the chair, that is correct. That is the plan that we have for this. Unless the working group comes up with another plan, that is the plan, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Are there other questions? Okay, I had another one on page 5, line 31. Uses the word major maintenance project. Is that too broad of a term? Major? How are we going to know what's major and what's not major, as far as going through this process? Do we need to define the word major maintenance project? Or
through the chair, That is an excellent question that I do not know the answer to. However, we do have school facilities manager Mr. Meerig behind me, and I'm sure he would know the answer.
Senator, do you have something?
I actually have the answer to the question if you want.
Go ahead, Senator Beckett.
Major maintenance and school construction are two defined in statute. They're two terms that are used to create two different lists. So when they use the phrase major maintenance, it's referring to that list in school construction.
Okay, ideal. That satisfies my question. Also, I'm wondering about outbuildings that might be on a school property. Are we including that in this? It seems like if we're going to put a shed or something for plowing equipment, that we might not need it to go through this process if it's an unheated building, for instance.
Through the chair, we have not thought about that aspect. If the working group does not deem it necessary to go through this process, then I think that would be fine with the senator's intent.
And with the parameters of the way the bill's written, that would work?
Yes. Okay. Through the chair, that is correct.
Okay. All right. I think that is all the questions that I have for Brittany. And there, I do have a question for the department. Is there any question that anyone has for the sponsor's aid?
I do have a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Brittany, will you be looking at some of the suggestions that I think members may have made? And are you considering any of those suggestions? And is there a timeline for when you might decide which ones would be acceptable to the senator that she might want to bring back to us?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, we do have a good list, especially all the ones that were recommended by this committee on Wednesday. We do have a list growing of recommendations, and we've heard from the Department of Law on a few things. We've heard from multiple people, and we have multiple recommendations that we will definitely be considering. I do believe that amendments are due today for this committee by 3 p.m., I would imagine that we would have an idea what we're planning on by 5 today.
So if you have something, one of the ideas we've discussed, if you get it to our office at 3 p.m. and we'll be in discussion, and you're welcome to be part of that as well. Senator Coghill?
So one of the questions I had was including the legislature, and I see on page 10, line 26 and 27, that after after the working group has done its work, they report to the legislature. I guess the timeline question I'll have for you is that before or after the regulations have gone into motion?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, the way that the effective dates are written is that once this bill is passed, the working group would have 18 months to come up with a report, submit it to the legislature, and then immediately following that, the regulations would have 6 months, so that makes it a total of 24 months. However, with your recommendation from last committee, we have been considering having it go to the legislature for approval before it gets put into regulation or put it in statute, so that is up in the air right now.
And probably the other question, and maybe this is for the department, they get to manage the way the regulation package goes out. That means they have to be involved pretty much throughout. As they're a member of this working group, the department has taken quite a hit economically over the last year or so, last couple of budgets actually. And are they going to bring a fiscal note that shows the workload for this?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, there is a fiscal note attached. I can go through it if you want me to.
Not at this point. I'll study it.
Okay.
That was one of my dumb questions.
I believe they ask for two full-time employees and one temporary employee.
And the other thing is I brought up the idea of the timeline, and I like the idea that you're keeping the work group nimble. I don't know that you would exclude contractors, but because it's a regulation-making body, I think having the group that you got in there is pretty good. 18 months is about as long as I'd want to go, but I know a year is pretty tight if you ramp up a group to come up with a group of standards that could be find their way into regulation. So even though I saw that as a little too long, I like the idea that they have a drop-dead date and they go out of commission. So I will probably not push that particular issue because it seemed like 18 months is long, but it's probably sufficient. And you get too much shorter, you might not get a good work product. So the other question is, and this will be for those who will be on the working group, and that is following up on Senator Begich's question, and that is, does the Energy Authority, the school district, Alaska Housing, do they have already a scope or a definition of climate regions? And I think that's something we need to at least have an idea what they're talking about.
Okay.
Through the chair, Senator Coghill. We do, in your packet, excuse me, there is a list of four climate zones in Alaska. However, we do know that there's many different weather regions in those areas. And I do have Alaska Housing Finance Corporation online ready to explain the zones and the regions, if that is the will of the committee.
Yeah, I think that would be good. And I think the concern was raised that it might be cost variables between some of those communities within the region. So,
Madam Chair, having gone through the question on redistricting a couple of times in my life, the economic issue, the transportation issue, the dependence, like hub areas, very different, as well as the climate. So those are probably all things that you want to take into account on this.
Through the chair, if I may. Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Coghill, we, in the bill as it is currently written, it does establish a cost per square foot, a maximum acceptable cost per square foot. However, it is subject to change due to your region, your climate zone, what type of soil you're working with. So there are variables involved in that.
And Brittany, you suggest that the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation be the best to address and add to that. Is that what you recommended a moment ago?
Through the chair, yes. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation would be great, and so would Cold Climate Housing Research Center.
Okay. We are on a little bit of a tight schedule, and I don't want to rush things, but if Stacey Schubert, if you're online and just would like to make a quick comment about how that might work, if you've heard our discussion, if you'd introduce yourself, please, and proceed.
We have, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is John Anderson. I'm the Director of Research and Rural Development for Alaska Housing.
Welcome, John.
In response to the question regarding the climate zones, what HFC has done and established for a long time is our building energy efficiency standards in reference to residential housing. We have applied those same climate zones through our own programs on our revolving loan for commercial application or public facilities. It does follow national models and trends that the Department of Energy, the Environmental Protection Agency puts out. What we have done is through our modeling software, which is known as ACWORM, is specific to residential, and then we do have a light commercial version of that. It follows the basic principles of heating degree days across the region. Now, with Alaska being unique, especially with one region in particular, which is the northern region, we have stepped our climate zone factors out even one step further to allow climate zone 9 for that factor. And it is specific to the energy characteristics of the region. So in response to the other questions regarding transportation and regional issues as far as cost of those things, that could be addressed, in our opinion, through the working group. But regarding the energy characteristics of the climate zone, it really is specific to try to keep the surrounding communities or regions within those specific climate zones.
Madam Chair. Senator Begich?
If I'm understanding you correctly, this is Senator Begich, the way that the bill is now written, the maximum acceptable cost must be adjusted for different regions within each climate zone, really only addresses the climate zone issue, and the regions there would then be defined by what AHFC is thinking about in terms of regions, but that I think we're going to need other language defining things like cost factors or transportation factors to really get to an actual square footage cost, because you're only setting those costs based on climate days. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, yes, you are exactly correct.
Thank you very much for that.
All right. And I have a question. I'm thinking, well, Brittany, I'll ask it, and you decide who would be best from our team of folks that are on. Having to, a question regarding on page 10 where we're talking about the 30-year life and the question of, based on the types of materials, could we push that up to 50? I'd love it to be 75 or 100, but I would just like to hear. So who would you suggest as far as the lifespan of buildings? What would be, could we move that 30-year up, and would that be reasonable? Would that be our DOT public facilities?
Through the chair, I believe that you can ask anyone on that list, and they would be helpful. I would recommend maybe Cold Climate Housing Research Center, but DOT would also be great. HFC would also be great.
Okay. Well, let's start with Christopher Hodgen, if you're on, if you have a short answer of what whether you think 30 years is as much as we should push it, or whether going to 50 might be workable.
Thank you. This is Christopher Hodgen from Department of Transportation of Public Facilities. 30 years for life of construction, if we push it out more, we just have to consider the cost factor. So if we push it out to a 50 or 75-year life, that might increase the first cost of the building. And then in terms of particular technologies on energy efficiency upgrades, some of the technologies have less than a 30-year life, so that would just be something to consider when a project has particular energy efficiency upgrade technology options in it. So some of our heating systems and lighting systems may have less than a 30-year life in them.
Okay. Thank you. And I'd like to hear from Jack. Who? Jack Hebert from Cold Climate Housing Research. Jack, can you hear me?
Good morning. Thank you. Through the chair,
state your name for the record, please.
Excuse me?
Can you please state your name for the record before you respond?
Sorry, this is Jack Hebert. I'm the founder and CEO of the Cold Climate Housing Research Center. Thank you. And I'm sorry about the protocol.
Oh, no problem.
The durability of a building has a number of factors, and I think that was well expressed a little bit ago, just previous, related to the mechanical systems. And yes, they do have a useful life cycle. However, the structure itself is dependent on the building science that's incorporated in it. And there is no reason that a building can't be designed to last 50, 75 years with proper building science and research on what we're putting in the building itself, in the assembly.
Thank you, Jack. How much do you think that might change the cost? Could you give us just a very rough percentage increase if we're shooting for 50 or 75 years?
Well, I can give you my personal experience, and I believe that it doesn't have to necessarily cost more with proper selection of materials.
Okay, thank you. That's very, very, very helpful. Are there other questions? Senator Begich, you look like you have one brewing.
I have one brewing. It's a small one. I heard that the Alaska Energy Authority might be online.
They are.
And I want to just on page 6, section 8 and subsection 1 there, in reviewing a project for compliance with criteria established under this bill, the commissioner shall consult with the Alaska Energy Authority. And I'd asked the question earlier, why not DOT, PF, since they have the expertise. And what I'm curious is it okay to ask the Energy Authority if this is something they're okay doing?
Yes, and we have online, who do we have with the Energy Authority? We have Katie Conway and Neil McMahon. So one of you want to respond to that, please?
Good morning. For the record, this is Katie Conway with the Alaska Energy Authority. And through the chair, Senator Begich, while AEA could certainly manage this task, it does seem to be something that might be worth asking DOT and PF. It seems to make a lot of sense since they do this work pretty regularly. That being said, as I started my comments, it is definitely something that we could manage here if the legislature so tasks us.
Follow up.
Madam Chair, is DOT on the line? Could they answer the question then, too?
They are on the line. Christopher Hodgen.
Thank you for the question. This is Christopher Hodgen. Yes, DOT could assist with that task.
It doesn't matter to me, Madam Chair. I just, whichever one is the best suited for it and most interested is what I'd like to make sure happens here.
Okay. Thank you. And in the interest of time, because we need to move on, I'm going to put a question on the record, and then perhaps afterwards the Department of Education and Early Development can let us know or speak to the sponsor. And that's just on page 8, when we're requiring these reports, the maintenance and support team at the up at the top there is going to report as well as the school district. So my question is, is this one report or two reports, and what if there's a conflict between those? And then also in the list of what's to be reported, A and C are very specific data, where B seems to have some subjectivity to it. So I was just wondering if that is going to work for the department, because when you talk about the condition of a school facility, is that subject to someone's opinion, or is there some hard criteria for that, some kind of a rating system? So that can be discussed later. And with that, we are going to set this bill aside again. If you have any suggestions, amendments, let my office know by 3 o'clock, and we'll be working with a sponsor. Thank you very much, Brittany.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And now, at this time, we're going to move on to Senate Bill, 78. So I invite Senator Bishop and his staff forward to go over the bill. And there is a CS in your packet, but we're going to go over the bill first, and then we'll bring forward the CS. Good morning.
Coffee break.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good
members
morning.
Of the committee. For the record, my name is Senator Clay Bishop. I represent District C. I think the last time I sat at this table, I was Commissioner of Labor, and Senator Huggins was the chair of the Resource Committee. So it's been a while. But
welcome back.
Thank you. So I know you've all got the bill packet, you've got a sponsor statement, and I'm going to go completely off the sponsor statement, just speak from the heart on the introduction of this of Senate Bill 78. So Senate Bill 78, it does set up a foundation for an innovative way to raise funding to help a great cause, and that's funding the future of what I call Alaska's greatest asset, our children. And our next generation of future leaders. You know, I've been a big fan of economic diversification. You know, we're an oil resource-based economy. I think it's high time, and we've taken the first step, the Senate has, to diversify ourselves away from oil and use a renewable, and that's our earnings of our permanent fund. My first job, when I was just a young person in Fairbanks, I worked for an individual there in Fairbanks, and my first check, he went through the deductions of that check. He says, kid, you see this $5 deduction? That's for your education. That's back when we paid an education head tax in this state. And I said, okay, great, that's good. He says, that which keeps the lights on in your building, supplies your teachers, gets your pupil transportation, et cetera. And okay, well, that's fine. So fast forward to today, and you know the legislature struck the education head tax funding at the same time as they did the state income tax in the 1980s. And for the last 4 years, I've been looking for a way to fund education, and I did two district surveys in the last 4 years. The District C supports the education head tax. I have ran two bills, haven't got a lot of traction. Support, but not traction. And it is an income tax. It is what it is. Just call it what it is. It's a limited income tax, but it's still a tax. And you know, when you're in an economic recession, I personally don't believe it's time to raise taxes on people. But this is voluntary. This is totally voluntary. You know, our survey results that we just did in District C, over 60% of the district supports education. They support CAP and the PFD and using some funds for general services. Again, this is purely voluntary. And recently, just in the last 2 days, I was reading emails, and I had an individual from my district says, Senator Bishop, for the last 2 years, I have signed my a PFD, endorsed it back to the Treasury, put the whole thing back in the to the general fund. And I told my staff, I says, get this gentleman a copy of this bill. Stay tuned. Hopefully it could pass. So while we are looking for a pathway forward to help fund education, and that's the whole goal of this bill, is to look into the future, way into the future, post-oil, to help partially fund education in a post-oil economy using Alaska's next renewable resource is the power of earnings of our cash. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop.
And Madam Chair, if I might, I'll hang for a few minutes. Anybody has any questions that I might be able to answer, but then I'll be off to Finance Committee, ma'am.
Does anyone have any question for Senator Bishop? And then we'll have his aide go through the specifics. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So do you make use of the pick, give? Is that the way people would put money into this program?
That's correct, Senator Stevens. And we'll get into the mechanics of that here a little deeper in a few minutes.
Thanks.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Why don't you go ahead and get into the mechanics for us?
Madam Chairman. Thank you. My name is Pete Bellman. I'm Staff Senator Bishop. SB 78, I think, is a lot of fun. I'm gonna, if you prefer, Madam Chairman, I could just launch into the concept, and then depending on how much time, I know you're pressed for time, maybe we could talk about the CS. So let's talk about the concept. The concept is that everybody would have an opportunity to donate to education on their permanent fund application. So the idea would be that in $100 increments, you could check a box and you could decide if you want to donate $100 or if you want to donate your whole permanent fund or donate it all. So as a concept, what happens then is we take all the donations, whatever that total unknown number is, and half of all that money goes directly that year into the public education fund. So bang, right off the top, half the money goes straight into education. A quarter of that money goes into an education endowment fund, which we're going to create. The education endowment fund will be managed. It'll be managed to make money, and it'll be untouched until it hits its cap. Once it hits its cap, the Education Endowment Fund will roll money automatically out of it into the Public Education Fund. The other quarter of the money will go into the Lottery Fund. And so when the Lottery Fund hits its cap, which is going to be $500 million under this legislation, then all future donations that are designated for that lottery fund will automatically roll into the Education Endowment Fund. So what we're doing is we're rolling money uphill to fund education. So the fun part is to induce people to donate their permanent fund to education. Out of the lottery fund, we're going to take 20% of whatever that unknown number is, and we're going to pay four prizes. And so it'll be at a 10%, 5%, 3%, 2%. And so 80% of the money that is in this lottery fund will stay in the lottery fund. The next year, when people donate, we're going to stack money from those donations on top of that 80%, and every year this lottery fund will grow. It'll be managed. It'll be managed in a conservative way to secure it. But when we hit the cap in that lottery fund, the money is going to roll up into the Education Endowment Fund. Once the Education Endowment Fund reaches its max, then it's going to feed money automatically into the Public Education Fund. And so we have, as you can see, and I don't know how much time we have, we run some numbers just for the fun of it. And we started, you can see the number of participants up on top and the average donation, and green is the education fund, is the public education fund, blue is the endowment, and so on. And just for the fun of it, if only 20,000 people this year, 20,000, give $100, it's still $1 million into education. You have the endowment, which you can see the $500,000 into the lottery fund. So the first prize could be $50,000 the first year. So we're anticipating, with the publicity in that first year, that it might get some traction. And the next year, the numbers could jump. And you can see there on line 13, in under C, column C, you know, in a reasonable fashion, if 150,000 people decided to donate, you know, now we're looking at a $790,000 payout. And so what do we get for it? We get $15 million directly into education right off the top that year. And so what our hope is to encourage people to play. Alaskans are known to enjoy the bucket lottery, and that's really what this is. This is really a bucket lottery. You buy your ticket, you put it in the bucket, somebody gets their name drawn out, half of that bucket lottery normally goes to another cause, and part of it goes to prizes. And this is really just a big bucket lottery for education. We hope to be able to secure that money and save that money for the future so it grows. And hopefully at some point it could be self-sustaining. It'll never fund education needs completely, but it certainly will help. Alaska has 16 variations of charitable gaming that takes place every year. Last year, $388 million was spent on charitable gaming last year. This year, one of our favorites up north, of course, is the Ice Classic. $780,000 was spent on that. They're going to pay out $300,000, and they're going to get $54,000 or so to charity, and the rest will be kept for operations. In our piece of legislation, the money to make this function comes out of the donations. We're not asking the state to put any money in this. The money there will take 2%. Of the money from the lottery fund will go to manage this program. So now I can get a little bit to the proposed CS. We found when we were doing our research and we did our spreadsheet, the 2% gets to be a real big number after a few years. So the proposed CS in the packet is to cap that percentage of money at $500,000 to manage this. We just didn't need a bunch of money hanging out there in year 10 that wasn't being used. And the other part of the proposed CS we found out with our research that about 125,000 people every year still use paper. And we originally, to Senator Stevens's question, originally we were just going to do it just like pick, click, give. But we found out that pick, click, give only takes place online. And so with the encouragement of revenue, they said, hey, there's 125,000 people out there that might like to play. So the CS takes out the word electronic from the permanent fund application. Just means you can do it on paper, too.
Pete, before you move on to the CS, I think it might be the last few points have been about that. So could I entertain a motion right now, Senator Coghill,
so Madam that Chair, we can I talk move that the Senate Education Committee adopt the R version, WO30-LS0534R, as the document, the working document for Senate Bill 78.
Thank you, Senator Coghill, and I'll object so we can continue to learn about it.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And with that, I'm happy to do the best I can. This is in concept, and I'm happy to talk about it all day.
Okay, it looks like we have time for one question, and then we will we'll continue on this bill at a future hearing. So,
I apologize.
Senator Begich.
It's actually not the pick, click, Bishop give vice chair?
Okay.
We got that on the record.
Senator Stevens, did you also have a question? Well, I have just one general question as we close, because we were chatting with it when you and Senator Bishop came to my office, and we were discussing the bill. Because we have state lotteries around the country, and this is very different. It's really more of a raffle. Could you kind of talk about the difference between a raffle and what we think is a true state lottery?
By definition, really, a raffle, a lottery, a drawing, all are games of chance. But this is a limited raffle or a limited lottery, because you have to be a resident of the state. The money only can come from your permanent fund check. It only happens once a year. You only have one chance to do it. And so this is not a continuing process that happens week after week or month after month. You get one shot at this. And so we don't feel like this is going to have the same plague that gambling and other lobbies have around the world. You're not going to be able to spend your children's money on it. You, unlike Pick, Click, Give, you can't donate your children's money. Now, Pick, Click, Give, you can use your kids' money to give away, but in this you can't. And so you can't spend your rent money. You can't spend your food money. This comes only from your permanent fund. So that's what really makes it different than any other game of chance in the state of Alaska.
Thank you for that. And just to expand on that, you think of the raffles at local chamber luncheons. It's a defined amount of time with a defined group of people, and that's what this is as well. So really, you chose the word lottery rather than raffle. Is there a reason why that was chosen, when it's really more of a raffle?
Madam Chairman, it was, as we thought this concept through, you know, we got really excited about it. You know, we thought, wow, this is different. It's innovative. The senator, you know, really, you know, he just nailed it in his ability to think outside the box. And we just, you know, lottery is kind of a catchword. You know, people think of a lottery as like it's a big opportunity, big winnings. People think of raffles as they want $100. And so in our idea, this really eventually with time could really incentivize people to donate to education. And can you imagine the day that the governor gets up and he announces the amount of the permanent fund, and at the same time announces four winners that, you know, one may have won $1 million, maybe $1.5 million, who knows? But, you know, it really is an incentive, you know. And we hope, of course, that people are really generous and that they donate, because really 95% of the money stays secure for education, 95%. And so we really hope that, you know, this will incentivize people and we can grow this thing into the future and take care of our children.
Thank you very much, Pete. I don't know that I've ever seen an aide so enthusiastic about his bill as you. And I want to make sure that I'm going to remove my objection so that that version R is now our official document. And we are going to set this aside, and our next meeting will be on Monday, and we will have what we hope will be the final hearing for the SB 87, the School Construct and Energy Efficient Standards Bill, and at that time we'll take public testimony on that bill, and then we'll be back hearing SB 96, and we have invited testimony for that from Commissioner Johnson and possibly other organizations impacted by the bill. So with that, at 8:46, we will adjourn the Senate Education Minute.